With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Everything good, guys?
All good. Great.
What a great show today.
Absolutely.
Big news out of Ohio State today. Big Ben might be worried about one of his receivers, and the Patriots got rid of another one of theirs. And that's where we begin this morning with the tools that Tom Brady doesn't have. The Patriots already paper thin at wide receiver, having released Jordan Matthews and Malcolm Mitchell, having Julian Edelman serving a 4-game suspension, and with Danny Amendola in Miami, they went and released receiver Kenny Britt yesterday. And in an effort to quell questions, Bill Belichick said he's not interested in Dez Bryant. Oh. All right, CC, what was your reaction to the Patriots releasing yet another receiver yesterday?
I'm not surprised. I didn't think Kenny Britt, when he signed with the Patriots, that he was the type of Patriot player that could do that for a long time. Now, have the Patriots kind of coveted a big receiver? Yes, they have. Ever since Randy Moss left, they've never been able to have a big physical guy. But if you look at Kenny Britt, what's his skill set compared to what do the Patriots want to do? No, you knew that this is not a long-term fit. Patriots receivers, what do they have to be? They have to be able to play multiple positions. They have to be able to learn basically kind of a new passing scheme week after week. So they have to be really smart. I'm not saying Kenny Britt is not a smart football player, but I'm just saying he's one-dimensional. He is your typical big X receiver, only plays to the boundary, doesn't go in motion. He's not fast enough to be a flanker. And the other thing, the reason why I didn't think he was a long-term fit was because he doesn't run with the football after the catch well. We know what New England likes to do. They like to be able to throw the ball around, but they love for a guy to be able to make that first person missed. Don't see that skill set, so not surprised that they also with his hamstring that they parted ways.
But when they signed him at the end of last year, they knew he could only play the one position, the X position. They still decided we'll bring him in, see if we can get anything out of him.
The reason why that was an advantage because he had all the OTAs, all the training camp, so he had a better chance of being able to do that. But most of that time, he's had a bad hamstring.
No, but the reason I bring that up is the Pats just dismissed out of hand almost Dez Bryant. And I listen, a lot of the things you're saying Patriot receivers have to be able to do are things Dez is not known for doing. It's one of the reasons we have not connected Dez to the Pats throughout this entire process. Play multiple positions, nope. Be a guy that is considered a really smart football player that at least wasn't his reputation in Dallas. But at some point, I would think you would say, okay, well, right now, Chris Hogan is our most accomplished receiver that is coming back to the team. Philip Dorsett, who was on the team week one of last year. He wasn't there for training camp, but they traded for him right before the season started. He had 18 catches. Danny Amendola for the season. Danny Amendola's gone. Cooks is gone. Edelman's gone for the first month. I would consider, if I were New England, doesn't sound like they will, but if I were New England, I would consider doing something that is not Patriot-esque, because this is as bereft of talent of a receiving core as we've seen them have in the Tom Brady era, dating back to the Troy Brown, Deion Branch days. Like, it's hard to find the guys who are going to have 60 catches, much less 90 catches.
Well, they're depending on Hogan having a tremendous year and also the number of running backs. I could see three of their running backs catching the ball 50 times. So that's the way they're going to do it. And what they can't afford right now is an injury to Rob Gronkowski. Because besides Brady and Belichick, Gronk is so, so valuable. And the one thing that New England will do as an offense, they will go through so many different formations. They're going to go a lot of motion. They're going to do a lot of shifting. You're not going to know where the guys are. So they're going to use a little hocus pocus, you know, to try to be successful, and especially to get through that first four games until they get Edelman back, Jenna.
We talked early in the week about sort of how light that offensive line is right now and how they really need to shore that up. And today we're talking about how light that receiving core is and how they're going to need to do something. And yet if we fast forward to the very end, we're like, oh, but it's the Patriots. They're going to be okay with whatever personnel they put out there. At some point, you got to start worrying. Tom Brady has to throw the ball to someone. Tom Brady's going to need a little protection to be able to throw the ball to someone. At what point, guys, do we get to the place where we say, that team needs a little bit of help now?
I mean, I'm already there, and if they were in maybe any other division in the NFL, I would be greatly concerned, even with Brady, even with Belichick. But when you know, like, okay, so the first process for any NFL season, for any team that wants to win a Super Bowl, is win your division. We know they've done it. Teams have done it from the wild card, but it's so much harder. You have the extra playoff game. You're not going to play any home playoff game. So the first step is win your division. And I look at the Bills, and their quarterback battles between A.J. McCarron and a raw rookie in Josh Allen. I look at the Jets. They're going to be starting Sam Darnold in week one. And I look at the Dolphins. They're going to be starting a quarterback in Tannehill who I didn't think was very good at his best, and he hasn't played football in over a year. Like, he's been on the Andrew Luck plan. We just haven't talked about it because it's Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins. Like, so when you feel like their division is a given, and that means they don't really have to have things figured out till December, they're just in a more advantageous position than any other team in the league.
Yeah, it's going to be – this is not the first time we've looked at New England and thought, Jenna, you know something? They need more talent. But, Nick, as you pointed out yesterday, I think, how many years in a row with 12 wins?
Since every year since 2010. 12 wins. Not 10 wins. 12 wins.
So it's not how are the Patriots going to score. How are the Patriots going to win? And they're going to do it, but a variety of different ways. But you can say that their confidence in Tom Brady, based on the people they have him playing with, they couldn't have more confidence in Tom Brady than this year, because they're going to need Tom at his absolute best to be able to play with this lack of a household name, lack of a dominant, a speed guy on the outside. Like, they do have a number one receiver in Gronk, so let's not forget that. I think because he's a tight end, people think, oh, you can't have a tight end that's number one receiver. Oh, yes, you can. And in New England, it's Rob Gronkowski.
You made a good point yesterday that if teams are going to get to the Patriots, you want to get to them in September, in October, in November. Don't let them start to figure it out. You know, once they get exactly, because once they get close to the end of winning this division, then they've sort of shored everything up. But looking at this receiving core, getting back to them releasing Kenny Britt, where do you think this receiving core ranks in terms of what Brady's had in the last couple years?
Well, they're not as talented. They're not as talented. They don't have a speed guy. Nick and I talk about all the time, if you have a wide receiving group, you like to be able to put together a basketball team. Well, they've had a dominant center, and that being in Gronkowski. And they've allowed the running backs. But when you miss Deion Lewis, they do have James White there, and he's going to have a spectacular season. They drafted Sony Michel, but they don't have those wing players that we like to have. They don't have size on the outside. They got a bunch of just guys that would just be normal wide receivers unless they didn't have this offense and that special quarterback running that offense.
Well, and look at the playoffs last year. Let's just go to catches in the playoffs. Who led them? Danny Amendola. He doesn't play for them anymore. Second was Rob Gronkowski. You mentioned he's the key, and he was second in catches even though he had been injured during the playoffs. Third is Brandon Cooks. He doesn't play for them anymore. Fourth is Deion Lewis. He doesn't play for them anymore. Fifth was James White. He's a running back. Now we're down to Chris Hogan, 6th, 9 catches. And we're saying Chris Hogan is the guy. When we're talking Chris Hogan, Cordarrelle Patterson, who's a kick returner. Like, it will be another magic trick if the Patriots turn Cordarrelle Patterson into a wide receiver. He was drafted as one, with a kick returner being a bonus, but you don't take a kick returner in the first round like Minnesota did. He hasn't been able to be a wide receiver in this league. I mean, because they're the Patriots, it's like, oh, they do have that 6th-round pick, Braxton Berrios. Maybe he'll be their Amendola. For no other team would we say their 6th-round undersized receiver, Braxton Berrios, could be a big contributor. But with the Pats, you think it's possible.
Now, I could be wrong in this, but I believe that Belichick and Brady believe that they're going to turn Cordarrelle Patterson into something. Now, do I think that might be the reason why they didn't sign Dez? Is because they're already working with the guy who has been there all offseason. I could see that happening because you can only have so many projects on your roster, but you can only have so many in so many rooms. You can't have four of your running backs to two of them to be projects. Right. Like, only one of them can be a project. So I believe the Cordarrelle Patterson, that is a full-blown experiment. And to try to bring Dez into that, I believe that what they've seen in Cordero, that probably prevents them from signing him and probably some other things.
And while we don't ever, obviously, you don't root for injury and you almost don't even want to bake in injury for any player in this league, if we are going to project the season, and I just ask you, you have to be right, will Rob Gronkowski play 16 games this year? You would say no.
No.
If I said you have to be right, will he play 14 games this year?
Probably not.
You probably say no. If I say you have to be right, will he play at least 12? That's about the number you'd say, yeah, I feel comfortable that Gronk will. Okay, like if he, I hope he plays 16. He's one of the most talented tight ends I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But when you're saying the one guy they can't lose to an injury is a guy who seemingly every year you lose time due to injury, that's problematic.
And if we don't have the bye week before Super Bowl 52, Gronk doesn't play.
Right.
He doesn't play because he was concussed.
Absolutely. And back to Dez, yet another team that is not interested in his services. We're going to take a break tonight. Thursday Night Football. How much can Baker Mayfield prove against the Super Bowl champs? That's next. First things first. First things first podcast is on the way. But first, a quick word from Lightstream. If you're thinking about saving money this summer, why not start by paying less interest on your credit card balances? Refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. It's an easy way to save hundreds to thousands of dollars and lower your interest rate. Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.89% APR with autopay. You could get your funds as soon as the day you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a great interest rate and no fees. So say goodbye to high-interest credit cards this summer and start saving with Lightstream. And get this. First Things First listeners can save even more with an additional interest rate discount on top of Lightstream's already low rates. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/FTF. That's Lightstream, LightStream.com/FTF. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com for more information. You know that special feeling you get when that Fox NFL theme song comes on? Cue that song up. Cue it up.
Oh,
that's the one. Just get excited. Thursday Night Football tonight. Eagles and Browns. Preseason in parentheses, with coverage beginning at 8 Eastern. Baker Mayfield back on center stage. The rookie has yet to throw an interception in his first 33 preseason attempts. I'm getting excited. Nick Foles will be under center for the Eagles after the quarterback avoided a serious injury in last week's game. CeCe, how much of a measuring stick is this game for Cleveland against the Super Bowl champs tonight?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity. You're talking about a lot of kids, young players within their first 4 years in the league. So I would say a lot of people think, well, what do the pros think in Cleveland? I said, man, it takes a long time for guys to start thinking about losing because they come from winning programs. It takes a long time. They just think it's either the organization, the coach, like eventually I'm going to win. Why? Because typically all of them have won. Last week's game, Philadelphia, they got dominated by New England. Philadelphia didn't necessarily have, after breaking training camp, the emphasis on trying to win that game. You could see the intensity. New England was playing at a different speed. We've had so many eyeballs on Cleveland in their preseason. Got Hard Knocks there. So now, week number three, which is typically the best week to measure where your team is. Cleveland going against the world champs. So for me, I think it's a good test because it gets them ready for week number one where they face the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
Right? So you can say that Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, they're four of the best teams in the NFL. So in week number three, Cleveland is able to say, because, you know, their coach, Hugh Jackson, said they're going to shock the world this year. I believe they're going to win at least six games. Coming off a one-win season, that's
a zero-win season.
Zero-win season. Yes, that's a tremendous vote of confidence as far as Hugh keeping his job. They got some good players. Philadelphia has better players. So they got some matchups in this game that we do want to see, but ultimately it's a matter of seeing Baker Mayfield, what he can do against a quality Philadelphia defense so that we can continue to watch the battle between Tyrod Taylor and, as their starting quarterback and the number one draft.
And more on that quarterback battle in a moment. But as far as the talent goes, we saw Michael Kendricks on this past week's episode of Hard Knocks, who had been with Philly, say to that defensive room, there's more talent in this room than there was in last year's locker room. We just don't know how to win. Now, you can disagree about the talent thing. That's a guy pumping his current teammates up. I get it. But I also truly believe this Browns team is not, forget you, there is no such thing as a typical 0-16 team because we'd only seen it once before. It's not even your typical 1 or 2 win team. I watched the Browns a lot last year because they were a fun team to bet against given their quarterback situation. That was a 3 or 4 win team, a typical really bad team who had the worst quarterback play we've had in this league in a decade. And that's not an overstatement. I dug into the numbers last night. Not only did DeShone Kizer throw the most picks in the league by a wide margin, not only did he have the worst completion percentage in the league by a wide margin, he had the worst quarterback rating in the league since 2010, since Jimmy Clausen played a season for Carolina that led to them.
Chuck and Jimmy Clausen.
Right, that led to
that's
them.
That's a name from the past.
Right, drafting Cam Newton. How did they draft Cam Newton? Because they had the number one overall pick as well because their team or their quarterback play was that bad. I look at the Browns and I say, I am curious to see how Myles Garrett does against Vitae, because I don't think Jason Peters is playing.
Yes.
You might say, oh, it's a backup. Well, he was their backup when they won the Super Bowl. I want to see how the Browns secondary, which is, I think, the weakest part of their defense, we will see how Denzel Ward does against Nick Foles. Oh, he's a backup. Yeah, he was the backup that won the damn Super Bowl. Like, I'm curious to see how this Browns offense does against a healthy Eagles defense that won the Super Bowl. Like, that, those are things, it is an important measuring stick to see, are the Browns going to be a competitive team this year?
How much are we buying into the Browns as a team that is going to be competitive because of all the hype that HBO has pushed in Hard Knocks, that the NFL has pushed in trying to put Baker Mayfield out there with the modeling and the next coming of the great thing in the NFL? I mean, I feel like there's a lot of hype surrounding this team. And is it just that, or is there some real substance behind it? Do you really see some talent on this team that could
question.
Win a couple
And the substance
games?
Part is it starts with John Dorsey. If we just had Hugh Jackson there, I've been like, you know something. He's going to get swallowed up in the Cleveland swarm, which all the other coaches. He wouldn't be the first coach to be a good coach. Bill Belichick, it got him there.
They are Eric Mangini.
Yes, it's a tough place to get that culture changed around, and because of the ownership. But John Dorsey brings stability. Todd Haley, I'm a fan of. So you bring him alongside of Hugh Jackson with these couple quarterbacks that they have. Jarvis Landry, getting him on the roster. Sign him to a huge $16 million contract. Trading for Tyrod Taylor, not putting the pressure on whoever they were going to be able to draft right away. Trying to hang in there with Josh Gordon and trying to help him in his life. So they're doing a lot of things. That was before Hard Knocks got there. I had told Nick I thought they were going to win at least 5 games because last year I saw them give away 5 games.
Right. That's the thing is, that's why I say they were a 3 or 4 win team. And I know that can be frustrating to you at times when I do the, yeah, but it could have gone this way. But everyone that wins a football game doesn't mean they should have won it. Like, it does. Every game, the winner is not the team that played better throughout the 60 minutes. It's just the team that scored the most points. And so sometimes you watch a game, you're like, man, I thought the Browns should have won that game. I thought they could have won that game. And to go 0-for on all the coin flip games, that's hard to do. But as far as the hype goes, I would think it was hype if we were saying Baker's going to do this, Baker's going to do that. My entire Browns prognostication involves Baker not playing.
It's on Tyrod.
It involves Tyrod Taylor.
Right. If your plan works, he doesn't play this year.
Exactly. If they are a 6-win team, if I'm right that they could be close to 8 wins, then Tyrod is the quarterback throughout the season. Maybe week 16, 17, it's a different story. But that's the other reason why that tonight's game's interesting. Baker's played really well. But the reason the Browns have been able to publicly and privately stick to the script is because Tyrod has yet to make a mistake this preseason. They haven't asked him to do a lot, but he's 75% completions, a 134 rating, hasn't thrown a pick, hasn't fumbled the football. We know the fan base is probably thinking, give us Baker. We know that they're organizationally, they're promoting Baker social media-wise.
Yeah.
You mentioned the not just the underwear modeling, that the organization didn't do that, but that John Dorsey parody video, the organization put that out.
No, they want him to be the face.
Absolutely, and he is the face.
And he will be.
But if Tyrod plays poorly in this game, which will be his last preseason game, he will still be the starter. But that then could quickly change the momentum of the situation and the narrative surrounding the quarterback situation in Cleveland.
And those are some of the reasons why tonight's game is very important for the Cleveland Browns. Philadelphia didn't play well last week against New England, so we know they will put more emphasis because week 4, they will sit most of their starters. I remember when Denny Green took over Minnesota Vikings, he let us know, not only his pre-camp meetings, but when we went to the preseason, he said, I'm getting ready to change the culture around here. Now, in Minnesota, it wasn't bad like Cleveland. He said, the preseason games are important, and we're going to send some messages. And, man, we ran up the score. I think we broke the preseason record. We ran up the score on a bunch of people. What they're doing in Cleveland makes these preseason games important so you can create a culture that they know how to win games compared to giving away games, which we saw them at least 5 of them last season.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up on the other side, are the Cowboys making a big mistake when it comes to Dak and Zeke? We'll tell you what we're talking about next. The NFL preseason continues tonight on Fox. Number one draft pick Baker Mayfield and the Browns take on the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles. Pregame starts at 8 Eastern, live from New York with Terry, Howie, and Michael. Then on Sunday, the Bengals square off with the Bills. You can catch it all on Fox or stream it live on the Fox Sports app. All right, time for us to go viral. Marshawn Lynch has been living his best life since returning to the NFL last season, and now he has fulfilled a lifelong dream. Take a listen to this.
Look at that. Pack.
Mama, we did it.
This is huge, bro. My face is on this pack of Skittles. This is dope.
Who's having a better life than Marshawn Lynch?
He's so happy,
man. Honestly.
I love this guy.
And I love the return of Marshawn Lynch because they didn't let him have too much fun. Mm-hmm. In Seattle.
Yep.
The relationship with the media and all that. See, I love, that's why all guys shouldn't do interviews. Just let them do themselves. I try to tell Roger Goodell and the people at the NFL office, man, just let them utilize their personality. Some of them don't have personality. He had one.
Right.
But that whole interview thing.
He has to be comfortable. If he
yes.
feels like he's allowed to be himself, you will get a better, more honest version of an athlete than we get from almost anybody. But that's not coming in the setting of, both teams played hard. I'm here, so I just won't get fined.
Also, 75% of the fun things we've done on the show is thanks in part to Marshawn Lynch.
He's the best, man.
Man, that's a big kid.
People should know, if you're ever in Oakland and you see, just maybe driving through the hood, a red carpet and one of those velvet ropes in front of a Lamborghini, that's because when he's driving his Lamborghini in Oakland, when he parks it, he takes out a red carpet and a velvet rope and sets it there. I love this guy so much.
That's
he's the
great.
Best.
All right, time now for some stories to start your morning. Thunder forward Jeremy Grant is tired of people saying that Russell Westbrook isn't a good teammate. He called that narrative ignorant. He said, Russ is a great teammate and a great person, and players obviously want to play with him. All right, Nick, what do you make of Grant's comments about Russ?
I absolutely love them, and I wish the media, sometimes the media is so arrogant that we just disregard what is a consensus amongst the guys who have played with Russ. Even Durant, through his burner account, said it was just KD and Russ. Like, who's the next teammate to say I hated playing with Russ will be the first. We know he's an inefficient player at times. We know sometimes he shoots the ball too much. But his teammates love him, and that has to matter.
We go to the pros because they can add a perspective that we don't know anything about. Russ, the guys that play with him, they enjoy playing with him. He plays as hard as you would ever want a human being to play the game. I could play with Russ.
And he's endlessly loyal. And his teammates appreciate that.
Just change his wardrobe just a little bit.
Moving on to the NFL, where one of the league's best defenses got even better. Vikings signed former Bengals safety George Iloka after Cincinnati cut him last week. Pro Football Focus ranked last year as Iloka's best season as he allowed just a 68.4 passer rating. All right, Chris Carter, what do you make of this signing by Minnesota?
This is one of Coach Zimmer's guys that he coached in Cincinnati. So you can bring a guy in. This defense, I think their secondary is ranked, coming to the season, the sixth best secondary in the NFL. He's another safety. Now they have three safeties. We know the All-Pro, Hitman Harrison, Santiago's a really quality safety. But Iloka is a better safety than him. They will play a three-safety nickel defense sometime compared to playing a nickel defense with three cornerbacks.
The key here is Mike Zimmer. I think he could have gotten a little. He's doing this for the minimum. I think the Houston Texans would have given him a couple million dollars. I think the Kansas City Chiefs were a little nervous about how Eric Berry's going to look coming off that Achilles. Mm-hmm. They have an injury to Daniel Sorensen, would have given him a couple million dollars. He wanted to get back with Mike Zimmer.
Yes.
And he wanted to be able to compete for a championship. This is going to be the most impactful late August addition any team makes. This is a really good player they got for nothing.
All right, Cardinals rookie quarterback Josh Rosen sat out of practice yesterday after banging his thumb on a helmet earlier in the week. It was the thumb on his throwing hand. The team is hopeful Rosen will play against the Cowboys on Sunday. See if Rosen can go. What do you want to see from the rookie in his third preseason game?
I want to see him continue to build on it. That's kind of been the theme for these other young quarterbacks in the third preseason game. They're going to probably see a few more exotic defenses. But also, I believe things like this for younger players, Nick, it will help them moving forward in their career.
That's what I was going to say, is that just like we said that Andrew Luck getting sacked by Suggs actually could have been a good thing because he dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, how many times in NFL seasons do you see a quarterback hit his thumb on a helmet? And it's not that he's got to play the next week. He got to play the next down. And so for Josh Rosen, he sat out practice, so he didn't have to do with it immediately. But he's going to be playing games at less than 100%.
Yes.
He's going to bang his hand on helmets. He's going to get sacked and have a sore elbow. And he's got to play through it. To be able to do it in a game that doesn't count as part of preseason, that's excellent experience.
Remember last year we saw Brady play with the lacerated hand.
Right.
All right, the Cowboys have announced that Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott won't be playing Arizona. Zeke hasn't played all preseason. Dak has played just four series in two games. But Jerry Jones noted the injuries to Zach Martin and Travis Frederick as reasons he doesn't want to put his two stars in harm's way. See, what do you make of the Cowboys' decision to sit Dak and Zeke?
Yeah, there are times during the preseason where you have to adjust to what's happened. And we play a collision sport. And when you've lost two of your valuable assets on the offensive line, Jerry is doing the right thing. Because it wouldn't be smart to put Dak in there with the offensive line with a couple replacements in there. We've seen Dak. He's played well enough. Now, yeah, what we'd like to see in going to his third year, for him to play the last two games, at least maybe a half or a half in the third game and a quarter in the fourth one. Yes, in a perfect situation. But we don't want that with replacements on the offensive line. Because if they start the season without their quarterback, okay, if you're a real Dallas Cowboy fan, tell me who their backup quarterback is.
I mean, I'll tell the audience.
I mean,
Cooper Rush.
I mean, it's that type of situation. He's not proven. If we talk about, man, their wide receivers, we're worried about them.
No,
you don't want to see no Cooper Rush in
the game. No, Cooper Rush, the Cooper Rush-Cole Beasley combo, it belongs in the CFL,
but
not
the
bricks,
NFL.
But
the bricks, Nick, the bricks.
And so like, that's the key here. Because in a perfect world, Dak is playing in the preseason. Because getting on the same page as Allen Hurns, getting on the same page as Michael Gallup, their third-round pick out of Colorado State, those would be valuable game reps, particularly in third preseason game. But Travis Frederick's dealing with a real health issue we learned about yesterday. Zach Martin's dealing with the knee, so they're not going to be there. That's Dak's side of things. Zeke's side of things is, man, I would set the over-under at career carries in the preseason for Zeke moving forward at like 12. The rest of his career until he is, if he's ever coming off a major injury, something like that. Like, star running backs in this league, once they are star running backs, are used sparingly in the preseason. We've seen Todd Gurley this preseason. No. What are your great Emmett Smith in the preseason memories? Not nothing. Like, I mean, these guys, you only have so many carries in your body at that position, and you don't need, This is the one position. I won't say you don't need to practice. I know that's practice is important. But Zeke doesn't need to play in extra games to be Ezekiel Elliott at that position.
Right, because the skills are so transferable. We always talk about, well, what position from college is the easiest to transfer over? It's running back because of their instincts and their natural runners with the football. Also, NFL fans should know that if I want Zeke and Dak to get some work where I can control it, we can scrimmage in practice.
Right.
I can have a 20-play scrimmage in practice, tell everybody, listen, we're just not taking the quarterback down, and we're not tackling the running back. So you can get a lot of work that NFL fans don't see that you can get by going against your number one defense. We talk about Dallas, how good their defense is going to be this year. You can create a great matchup in a rarefied atmosphere where you can control it in practice. Will give them enough reps that Zeke's going to carry the ball at least 20 times week number one. And the reason why he'll be able to do that is the coaches will get him prepared there as we approach these last 2 weeks of the season where they will have ones-on-ones a lot in practice.
So you're not that concerned, not about Zeke, but about Dak not playing in the next
season. Because it's the right decision based on where the team is right now. You're going to see some other starters be pulled from that lineup also.
All right, moving on. After a two-week investigation, Ohio State has suspended Urban Meyer for the first three games of this season. The investigation found that the Buckeyes head coach mishandled domestic assault allegations made against his former assistant, Zach Smith. The university also deemed that Meyer misrepresented his knowledge of the situation during Big Ten Media Day back in July. The embattled OSU coach met the media last night. Take a listen.
I'm fully aware that I'm ultimately responsible for the situation that has harmed the university as a whole and our Department of Athletics and our football program. I want to apologize to Buckeye Nation. I followed my heart, not my head. I fell short in pursuing full information because at each juncture, I gave Zach Smith the benefit of the doubt. As I reflect my loyalty to his grandfather, Earl Bruce, who was my mentor and like a father to me, likely impacted how I treated Zach over the years. I did not know everything about Zach Smith, which was what Zach Smith was doing, and I'm pleased that the report made this very clear. I did a poor job at Media Day. It's a big reason why we're here today. I was not being as complete and as accurate as I should have been at Media Day and afterward. But there is no intent to mislead. My role is to set a good example. In this instant, I did not live up to the university's standards.
So the university released the following statement. Although neither Urban Meyer nor Gene Smith condoned or covered up the alleged domestic abuse by Zach Smith, they failed to take sufficient management action relating to Zach Smith's misconduct and retained an assistant coach who was not performing as an appropriate role model for OSU student athletes. Permitting such misconduct to continue is not consistent with the values of the university and reflects poorly on Coach Meyer, Athletic Director Smith, and the university. All right, Chris, let me start with you. What was your reaction to all of this?
Well, God knows I love my university. And for those who don't know, Urban Meyer is a very, very dear friend of mine. Him and I are very, very close. I've been knowing his wife for over 30 years, basically. Urban coached me at Ohio State. First job... He's a Buckeye. He was born in Ohio. His first job was to coach the wide receivers. That was my junior year. That was the year I was first team All-American. The first wide receiver to ever be an All-American in Ohio State. And the story is not about me. The story is to give context to my relationship with that university and with that man. I was disappointed. I was disappointed in the university, and I was disappointed in Urban. I was disappointed that as someone, as a department head, for you not to know the people who you are employing. And, you know, they fooled me because I have had Zach coach a few of the kids who I coached there. And some of those kids felt like that Zach wasn't the quality of the coaches of the other, Larry Johnson Sr., people like Mike Vrabel, who have coached at that great university. That's one of the great things. They talk about Urban, but, man, we've always had a line of great assistant coaches. So on many different levels was I disappointed because Urban should have known that. That's his responsibility. But just like all of us, Urban's human. We have blind spots. And he allowed, because of his mentor, Earl Bruce, who also recruited me since I was 16 years old, and he was my coach at Ohio State. So I understand what Urban's saying about his grandson and how Urban was mentored by Earl Bruce. Yeah, I can see all that. But this is not a mistake that Urban Meyer typically makes. Urban Meyer is typically always buttoned up on all these situations. So to me, it was a message to me that even the people who we think we know, we need to continue to take inventory in this 2018, because what happened in 2015, 2009, 12, we live in a different era as far as sexual harassment, domestic violence, all those things. Man, we have to continue to check our circle to make sure that we know the people who are around us. And the last point I'm going to make is all those disgusting things that people reported that Zach Smith did at the White House, I was at the White House. Like, this guy is like, I was there. I was there with the team taking pictures with the president. Urban called me on stage. Myself and Archie Griffin, the only two-time Heisman Trophy winner. So, man, there's a lot of different levels of this of disappointment. I thought the university should suspend him for 5 games because I thought he should lose at least 1 or 2 Big Ten games. We play Rutgers week number 2. But no, he should probably miss that Penn State game, which would take the suspension potentially to 5 games. I think that would have been penal. I don't think that he should have lost his job, but I am disappointed in my friend. He's still my friend, though, because for him not to know a person like that, I could see he had a blind spot because he was the grandson of someone who was a mentor to him.
And I understand the relationship of you want to take care of your mentor's grandson. The question I had in this situation is, what about your mentor's great-grandchildren? Because those little kids saw their mom getting beat up, allegedly, I'm supposed to say here. And Urban heard that this something like this had happened in 2009, reportedly. And I'm big on second chances. You can argue in domestic violence should be no second chances, but I'm big on second chances. Isolated instance, this is not who I am. When you hear it again in 2015, that's then a repeated pattern of behavior. There's now children involved. And that's where the enormous lapse in judgment that I would argue continued every day from 2015 until Zach was fired. Continue. At Ohio State's practice complex, see, you've been there. They got something written on the wall. It says, honesty, treat women with respect, no drugs, no stealing, no weapons. Well, the no drugs, no stealing, no weapons, that seems to still apply. The honesty, Urban had a major misstep with the media. But that treat women with respect, to me, that program has to earn that back. And I when this story first came out, I said this. I want to say it again. This is another reminder on a big picture scale that when it comes to domestic violence, almost always, men have the power. And I don't just mean the alleged assaulter. I mean typically the people in positions of power around that person are men. And if any of those powerful men had stepped in at one point in time, maybe this woman's in better shape, maybe her children are in better shape, maybe everyone is in better shape. And you're right, it's 2018 and we have a better understanding of it now, but it's so troubling for me that a lot of us have this blind spot,
right,
where we wouldn't accept open racism from our friends, but a little misogyny, a little sexism, like those things, to me, a lot of us have blind spots on. As far as the punishment goes, I didn't think he'd get fired. Whether he should be fired or not, I didn't think he would be fired. I agree with C. If he would have been more penal to miss a big game in Penn State, but that's to me not the bigger story here. It's about Zach Smith, his ex-wife, and the children.
No, and I echo what both of you guys are saying. I also would have liked to have seen a little more of a heartfelt apology as opposed to just reading from a prepared statement with what felt like very little heart and very little remorse. But again, he was blessed with another chance to come back, to have just three games missed, right. So, all right, much more on this. We'll have much more in First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. look who it is, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty. Hey, Chris, haven't seen you in a while. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Summer winding down, things are good?
Summer winding down, things are not good because my Yankees took an L down in Miami, lost to one of the worst teams in baseball, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Got an off day, hopefully they regroup, we bounce back in Baltimore.
None of it matters, man. It's coming down to one game. You got one game for the wild card? Yeah,
I'll be trying to see behind the camera, you lose it.
I held out hope that maybe they could catch the Reds. Maybe.
Yeah, right.
Maybe.
Hey, if you're a kid these days and you've got the most coveted toy in your possession and you're not going to play with it like that Nintendo power pad that Chris Canty used to have, why not see if any of your friends would maybe trade you something for it? That's where the Oakland Raiders sit with all-pro defensive end Khalil Mack. The Raiders don't seem to want to keep him. At least a dozen teams have reportedly reached out to the Raiders multiple times, the most recent being the Jets. So, Canty, I ask you, should the Jets deal for a Nintendo power pad and Khalil Mack?
100%, Jenna. This is one of those no-brainer situations. If Khalil Mack is available, Mike Maccagnan has to make the deal. When I had a chance to talk to Mike Mack during the preseason, one of the things I asked him was about his defense and specifically about his pressure players because they don't have a lot of guys that can win one-on-one on the edge on their roster. And he didn't rule out the possibility that they could potentially look to trade before the regular season to bring back one of those pieces. He volunteered that information, but now after the news earlier this week about them being interested in Dante Fowler Jr. and then the Khalil Mack report surfacing, it's starting to look like the Jets are trying to get that one missing piece from their defense. If you look at all three levels of their defense, the edge pressure player is the only thing that's missing right now.
Well, let me ask you this. This is what would you do, and then also given your relationship with Maccagnan, what do you think he would do? The Jets are not going to be good this year with or without Khalil Mack. They're going to be drafting in the top 10 again, I would imagine. Would you trade a first-round pick, which could be not only top 10, maybe top 5 for Khalil Mack, and do you think the Jets would do it?
Absolutely, because when you look at what the Jets need, they're going to have the defense be the identity of this team. That's where they have most of their draft capital. And I get that you traded up to draft Sam Darnold, and this year, by and large, is about the development of Sam Darnold. But what's going to help a young quarterback? Being able to have a defense that can create extra possessions and field position so he can take advantage of those opportunities. So that's why I look at it. It's going to be a first round plus, whatever the compensation
because
is.
Because the Jets already don't have a 2019 second rounder. Because they traded up. That's the key here, or part of it at least, is they've already traded. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. I just want the audience to remember. They were drafting sixth. They traded 6 and 3 second rounders, 2 this year and 1 next year, in order to be able to move up to 3. So if you trade for Mack, you're not drafted in the first 65 picks next year. That's what the Jets would be looking at.
But if you're looking at using a draft pick, you're probably going to think about in the first round a pressure player or a wide receiver, somebody to help Sam Darnold, because you don't have a whole lot of holes on that roster outside of those 2 or 3 respective positions. Offensive line can use an upgrade as well. So
if you're concerned about the draft pick being too high, well, then let me tell you who you'd be drafting. You're going to be drafting either one of the 4 kids from Clemson, either Nikki Bowles at Ohio State, our big man Oliver,
Ed Oliver from Houston,
University of Houston. Now, would you rather have them or Khalil Mack, who also, happens to be from the University of Buffalo, which happens to be in New York. So you get the premier rusher, one of the premier rusher, compared to a hope and a prayer. Because out of all those players I've mentioned, that's 6 defensive ends, defensive tackles and ends, I can guarantee you 4 of them will not reach their potential. So you're rolling the dice. So that draft pick, man, you can have that draft pick because I'm trying to find a Khalil Mack. So the Jets, with their salary cap room, make an investment in your quarterback, all right, who is your future. Make an investment in your head coach. He did a remarkable job with those pieces that he's got. Man, give him a pass rush. He's a defensive specialist. As a coach, give him one of the premier pass rushers. I believe this is a no-brainer for the Jets to bring in one of the premier rushers to put him in that, to put him on the perimeter to be able to play in front of that home crowd where he is from this state playing. I believe that you're not going to get that type of value of any player. And there's some good players in this year's draft better than Khalil Mack.
No, you make a very good point. But is there something to be said for putting your trust in the general manager that he drafted, he moved up to get Sam Darnold. Let him really build this young team. You're not going to be great for the next couple of years. You're going to have an opportunity to maybe put together a lot of young guys that are going to be high in the draft and grow everybody at the same time.
Well, here's the thing, Jenna, and that's a valid concern, the culture that's in the building. But if you look at what Mike McCagnan and Todd Bowles have done together over the course of the last couple of off seasons, they've moved on from some veteran guys in that locker room that necessarily weren't on board with mm-hmm. what Todd Bowles wanted to do.
Yes.
They had to clean up the locker room chemistry. There were some issues going on after that Brandon Marshall, Mo Wilkerson, Darrelle Revis era of Jets football. So I think that he's done a good job of being able to do that. Now you just have to infuse the roster with talent. But the one thing that I will say, there's got to be some winning to support all of the slogans and the mantras that Todd Bowles and Mike McCagnan have been selling those guys. I mean, it's one thing to preach it during the offseason and during the preseason, but if you're going out there in the regular season and what the Todd Bowles and Mike McCagnan told you isn't working, you're not having success in the way of winning, then it's going to be a problem. So I think you've got to be able to go out there and get somebody like a Khalil Mack that can be a difference maker for this team.
Yeah, I support you. And there's no team, there's no franchise in any of the four major sports that can win a championship with all young players. It's nice to say, hey, we're going to groom all these players together. But you can't have that. You have to have different levels of productivity. And you have to have different levels of experience in the league. Because if not, everyone's not going to gel together. You need some veteran players that are established, like Khalil Mack, to bring some stability and leadership to that organization and locker room.
And Mack is the perfect type of veteran, given your concerns, because he's 27 years old. He's entering year five. If he were a 31-year-old pass rusher, then
yes.
I would be more concerned about it. And to be fair, so the audience knows, I was presenting the argument against it because mm-hmm. I thought everyone at the table was going to be for it. I also think you can get Khalil Mack. You can get Khalil Mack. Like, the NFL GMs sometimes don't do this math. I don't want to trade this draft pick. What's the best case scenario for your draft pick? Like you said,
he's half as good as Khalil Mack.
Your best case scenario is one day he becomes a defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
Well, this guy already is. And the salary cap room that you mentioned is key here. There are some teams that might say, you know what? I'd rather draft a guy who could turn into him, who for the next 4 or 5 years I have on a very depressed salary, than pay a guy top of the market. But the Jets have so much cap space going into next mm-hmm. year. They even could do a contract where they give him an enormous bonus up front, so by the time they are paying Sam Darnold, his cap hit isn't so onerous. That's one of the issues going on with the Rams and Aaron Donald right now. They don't have a ton of cap space right now. Mm-hmm. They also know we're going to have to eventually pay Jared Goff. We don't want Donald's money to balloon at the same time we're having to pay Jared Goff. Like, the Jets have a lot of weaknesses. We focus on their wide receiving core, most noteworthy. Pro Football Focus says the biggest weakness of their team is not defense, but pass rush. Pretty good run defense,
yes,
but no pressure on the quarterback. In my eyes, he's the best player in the league at getting pressure on the quarterback. Mm. If you can get him, I think that's a no-brainer for this football team.
Raiders fans, frustrated. Oh, big yeah. frustrated.
Bottom line, you're not going to be a good defense unless you can get to the quarterback.
It's true. All right, got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, big missing piece for the Giants. Details next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Canty. Canty, your former team, the New York Giants, were happy to get Saquon Barkley back in practice. He's been out 10 days after tweaking his hamstring. While the rookie said he felt good, head coach Pat Shurmur was noncommittal when it came to clearing Saquon for week one. And Eli Manning made it a point of saying that Barkley missed valuable time with his absence. Chris, how big of a deal is Saquon missing most of the preseason?
To me, it's got to be a big deal. I mean, because you drafted Saquon Barkley with the expectation that he was going to help Eli Manning in this offense compete for a championship over the course of the next 2 seasons. That's how long the Giants have Eli Manning under contract. If that wasn't the intention, if that's not the expectation, then they probably would have went ahead and drafted one of those young quarterbacks like you saw the crosstown Jets do. But the fact that they have Saquon Barkley and he's only played in one preseason game and he's probably not going to play the rest of the preseason, I'm a little bit concerned, just because it's a lot to ask a young running back to come in without playing the majority of the preseason and have to get 15 to 20 touches going against one of the best defenses in the NFL in the Jacksonville Jaguars in week one.
Yeah, and also let's look at OBJ. People forget that he struggled with a hamstring problematic early part of his career, especially that first year getting through training camp and those first couple games. But you don't get better at pro football unless you're practicing pro football. And what Eli is not trying to be critical of him, but he's saying in the last 2 weeks of training camp, we talked about before, those simulated scrimmages you can have in practice with the Dallas Cowboys with Zeke and Dak not playing. When you're not picking up blitz protection, when you don't feel guys how big they are, how strong they are, now he's just adapting, which he would have done the first 2 weeks of the preseason. He's going to be adapting the month of September. Live bullets, games can be won and lost with his decision-making. So Eli is right, and Eli is the one that can receive those mistakes. If he doesn't know the blitz protection, if he gets knocked back, if he's limited, he can only play one or two downs because of his lack of experience. It affects this Giants offense. When you were putting the type of responsibility on this rookie, you would have loved to have seen him play in three or four games behind this very suspect offensive line, especially on the right-hand side.
Obviously, it's not ideal, but if you're telling me a guy that's a top 10 pick that we need to be an instant contributor is going to miss the vast majority of preseason games, three of the four. He had that awesome, feels like he had that first play of his NFL career in the preseason, and nothing since then. He hurt his hamstring in practice on a fly, on a long pass catch, and he's going to be able to practice, by the way, but if you're going to tell me you're going to miss one of these guys, the position I hope it is running back. Like, the guy that I'm least concerned about, even if it's not ideal, is this position. And a guy that level of talent at running back as well. I mean, tell me if you guys think I'm wrong. Like, some of the blitz pickup stuff, some of the things he has to learn classroom-wise, he can still do that with live practice and in the meeting room rather than in the preseason.
It is not the same. It is not the same getting on a whiteboard. We're going to draw this up compared to an NFL linebacker in the type of intensity that he's going to bring in those types of settings. So, no, this is not transferable. And he hadn't seen this. The running back thing that we say is transferable is everything they've seen since they were 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So they adjust to that. The blitz pickup and the passing game are the hardest parts. And the reason why I can't agree with you is if this was Ezekiel Elliott, if this was a guy who was a workhorse in college, so what happens week number one? We get the game. We're up by 4 points late in the game. He's got 15 touches. Can he take another 10 touches?
They're going to need him to.
Yeah.
But would you learn that in preseason? Because in preseason, they're not going to have him do that.
He's been in his first NFL game, Nick. He has seen the wear and tear. We could see it. We can feel it. You know how many running backs they're going to dress on game day? Three. At Penn State, you know how many running backs they got dressed?
Ten.
I mean, it's just a total different game, and you need those reps to be able to adjust. It's fairly shocking, your first NFL game, and you realize it's 48 of us in uniforms? Wow, where'd the team go? We're used to in college dressing 120 at home, 60 on the road. Like, it's a big adjustment when you look around and see, man, there ain't no backups. Like, so those things that become – the preseason can never be removed from the NFL if they want the product not to suffer severely. We have seen even with the practices, not the lack of two-a-days, the product already suffers early. And we will see a young player who didn't participate, he will also suffer, Chris.
CeCe, is it fair to say that he's missed the majority of the preseason in terms of actually playing in games, that he's probably not going to be at his best in week one of the NFL season?
It's impossible to say, because even if he's great in week number one, how much better would he have been with some reps?
My point exactly. I'm just saying, with everything that this Giants team is trying to do this season, Saquon Barkley is going to be a huge piece of that.
Oh,
not just
totally
with the
agree.
Offense. The team's formula for success centers on Saquon Barkley being a running back that's capable of producing 1,500-plus yards from scrimmage, 12-plus touchdowns. If they don't get out to the kind of start that they need to, because Saquon Barkley is taking a little bit of time to adjust and get acclimated to regular season football because he didn't have a lot of preseason, that could put the Giants in a big spot. I mean, that could put them in a tough spot.
But we have to assume there's going to be a little bit of that getting adjusted or acclimating to the NFL regardless. I think we have an idea just because of the guys we've seen the last couple years, the Leonard Fournettes, Todd Gurley, Zeke. They came out and had fantastic rookie years. That can't be the norm with running backs.
No.
I mean, if we think that's what Saquon Barkley is going to do.
He's the number two overall pick.
You think he has to be?
Yes, absolutely. It has to be that. You don't draft a number two. He's the highest drafted running back since Kajana Carter. Like, and he was drafted higher than Zeke, than Gurley, than Fournette. And Zeke, by the way, with a full preseason, should be noted, his only bad game of his rookie year was his first game. Like, his first game of the rookie year, I think he had like 30 yards. Top of my head, I'm going to say that. And then he was a monster moving forward. The Cowboys, by the way, lost that game. It was Zeke and Dak's first game. And then they went on from there and went 13-2 the rest of the way.
Do you remember, I don't know if it was week number 2 or 3 in the Cowboys' rookie season there that you talked about with Zeke, that he went to Seattle. Mm-hmm. Not the part about him going to the dispensary during the daytime, yes, but at night when they played the game. Him and Cam Chancellor, remember, they ran into each other deliberately. Mm-hmm. The confidence that Zeke left that game with and the message that he sent to the league, it was fairly man, if you're going to run into Cam Chancellor, this guy right here must be serious. So Zeke was able to get that bounce of confidence going into week number 1, which still didn't lead to a great game. I'm sure in talking to OBJ, if he could take something back from his rookie year, he would change the beginning. He would wish he was at training camp practicing more and not having that hamstring hinder his beginning.
Listen, what you say that I fully agree with is the every path to the Giants being a 10-win team or competing for the playoffs involves Saquon Barkley being a monster.
Yep.
Every single one involves, forget offensive rookie of the year, we're talking offensive player of the year in the discussion. Like, there is no way for the Giants to be really good without this guy being great. I feel like, and again, maybe I'm wrong, I feel like the 18 touches that he would have gotten in week 3 of the preseason isn't going to flip that one way or the other. Now, the first week against Jacksonville, that's not the ideal opponent to be going up against. I understand that.
I guess my whole point is, Nick, they can't afford to get out to a slow start. They got the Jacksonville Jaguars week 1, then they're on the road against
Dallas,
the Cowboys, the Texans, and then back home for the New Orleans Saints. If the Giants are trying to compete for a championship this year, you look at that schedule and say, if Saquon Barkley's not at 100% week 1, their season could be over before it even gets started.
Nick, I know you've driven your car fast because I've been in the car when you drive fast and fairly reckless.
Okay.
You ever been on the Autobahn?
What? No.
Oh, I have. I've driven on. Jenna, you have?
Yes, I have.
There's nothing that will prepare you for that. And that's what week number 1 against the Jacksonville Jaguar is going to be like. So I don't know where he's driving now. Don't know what speed he's going. But what he's going to see the first week, there is nothing. There is no Penn State football to get you ready for week number 1, let alone one of the top 5 defenses we're going to see in the Jacksonville Jaguar.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.